will assist with the chair. So good morning, Honorable Deputy Minister.
Morning.
You are welcome.
Morning, Chair. Morning, Chair. Dear. And get well. Good morning. Get well.
Morning, Comitina.
Thank you, comrades. Oh, Honorable Members. Honorable Members, I'm going to ask for the apologies, and then we can do the agenda. Babawa, can I have the apologies, please?
Good morning, Chair. I received the apology from the Minister, Dr. Groenewald, Honorable Sheikh Imam. Yes, I've got three apologies, Chair.
Thank you very much for those apologies. Yes.
She forgot to mention the fact that 10 o'clock I'm going to attend international relations.
Babawa, please apologize. I'm sorry for that, Honorable Meshu. Babawa has apologized. We're not going to do opening remarks. I'll just be very brief when I do the opening remarks. And today we are going to do the briefing on IPED and the Civilian Secretariat. Do I have an adopter for the agenda?
Good morning, Chair.
Honorable Peacock?
I move for the adoption of the agenda, Chair.
Peacock proposes the adoption of the agenda. Do I have a seconder?
Good morning, Chair. I second it. Linda Moss.
Honorable Moss seconds it. I'm not sure who is all in the meeting, but when we do the presentations, you will introduce yourselves. On the iPad, I think General Klutz, no, she's not, she's the executive director. DM reminded and corrected me that she's not the general, although I would really like that position to be a very senior position. Now, when you started, and I think you just came, you were hardly in office a few months, and you came to the Portfolio Committee. The Portfolio Committee gave you a serious, very serious grilling. And I think you left the Portfolio Committee bruised and very hurt, but that is the nature of the Portfolio Committee. When you come into a position, you inherit all the scars and all the weaknesses of that position. So I think we must understand that when you're appointed to a position, it doesn't mean that you're appointed to the position for 1 month and we're going to be evaluating you on the 1 month. We are going to evaluate you on what the committee has decided, and there's continuity. The whole set of decisions which we took in the committee will be evaluated and decided upon. So, General Sentumule, if I was very strict on you yesterday, my apologies. I apologize to you. She's the head of Forensic Science Laboratories. She was recently appointed, and she's recovering from COVID. But General Sentumule, if you see and your presentation states that we're only going to see some headway, and we'll only be making some headway in to start addressing the backlog in 2022. This is a serious indictment on each and every woman in this committee, each and every woman in Parliament, and each and every woman in SAPS. Now, if you think I'm going to be taking this very lightly, then you are horribly mistaken. So, DM, please, I don't see General Sithole there. Apologize to General Sentumule if she was taken very harshly. I know she's recovering from COVID. But the matter of the forensic science laboratories, we are not, we cannot be soft on it. Deputy Minister, if I receive phone calls of mothers who say that this court case has been thrown out, my 10-year-old child was raped, there can be no closure. The perpetrator is walking around, and because of the lack of DNA evidence, this is not emotional. This is a reality. It's become a reality in our country. Dim, if we cannot solve the problem, and this was General Mamutiti, she also had a tough time yesterday at the committee. If we cannot solve the problem of the Central Firearm Registry, I'm going to write to the minister to say that we cannot take in any new applications until you address the backlog. Again, I've told you, we cannot continue with business as usual. You have designated firearm officers. You have court orders against you. The court orders speak about compliance in the Central Firearm Registry, and there's no compliance with the court orders. Likewise, I'm not confused. You have court orders with the Central Firearm Registries, and you have court orders with the Forensic Science Laboratories. So please, you cannot tell me that you are new there, so you don't know about the court orders. There has to be a handover. The handover must tell the new incumbent what has been done, what the committee has been asking for, and when you're going to actually address the concerns of the committee. Now, the FDA has won serious court orders against the steps. So there are court orders with the forensic science laboratories, and we want responses. My memory serves me correctly. Honorable Whitfield, was it you that said they should come and report more often? Honorable Whitfield, was it you?
Yes, Chairperson. In November last year, they committed to present monthly reports to the Committee on the Turnaround Plan.
Honorable Whitfield, you see, I have had sleepless nights last night because it's what you call malicious compliance. They submit reports, but you don't see any progress. So if this committee is going to be listening and hearing reports of malicious compliance where they just comply for the sake of the fact that the committee asked for monthly reports, then we are not going to turn around crime. Yesterday, we did the three key and critical areas regarding our work as a committee. And today, we're going to do the bills. The first one is the crime statistics. Deputy Minister, the Minister is not here. I will write to the Minister and say that previously there were closed meetings. We can apply to the Speaker to have closed meetings. We will have closed meetings before the Minister releases the crime stats. When he leaves that closed meeting, he can go and release his crime stats to the media. The minister is accountable to the committee. He reports to the committee. He doesn't report to the committee via the media. So I will write that letter. The forensic science laboratories, you keep on sending us a plan. You are trying your turnaround plan. You're waiting on people. You're waiting on equipment. And the backlog is increasing. We are failing. I'm saying it again. We are failing women, we are failing children. The forensic science laboratories, you tell us that only three provinces are functional and the rest are not. You have...
the financial performance of IPIT for four quarters in the financial year 2020-21. Chairperson, for the financial year under review, the department was allocated a budget of 341 million. The budget was cascaded through four programs of the department, which are administration, investigation and information management as a core function, and two other programs that are enabling programs, legal services, as well as compliance monitoring. Chair, you will also notice that the bulk, more than 70% of that budget was allocated to program two, which is the core function. For a first quarter in that period, Chair, the department spent 106 million. When you look at the spending in that particular quarter, Chair, and other quarters, you'll realize that for the first quarter, the amount of expenditure was significant, mainly because of we accumulated expenditure from the financial year 1920 related to implementation of Section 23, which we are still continuing to implement. For the second quarter, Chair, the expenditure was then dropped to 67 million, which translates to a 50% spending. The third quarter ended December. The expenditure was 89 million, which translated in percentage to 77%. For the last quarter, period ended March. The expenditure for that quarter was 78.6 million, and accumulatively, the percentage was 99.99%. So as a result, Chair, the department was able to spend the whole budget that was allocated, with few invoices that we could not pay, which were accumulated to the new financial year that we are currently in, 21-22. If we paid all the invoices, it was going to be possible that we overspend our budget, since it's not an enough allocation. Next slide. Chair, here we are demonstrating the financial performance of the department in terms of the economic classification. Once again, Chair, you'll notice that the bulk of our allocation is in composition of employees. This is where our investigators are paid their salaries, and it has increased because of the implementation of Section 23. Because of the salaries of the investigators have since been increased to be in par with the detective from SARS. So as a result of that, our composition of employees has increased. And Chair, on the first quarter, the period ending June, once again, as a result of that Section 23, our expenditure was significant to 88%. But other quarters in that financial year were within the targeted percentage. The second quarter, we spent 66.7 million. The bulk of spending was in compensation of employees. The third quarter, the compensation of employees, the spending was 67 million. The goods and services was 31.7 million. In terms of the fourth quarter, which was the last quarter of the financial year, the compensation of employees was 54 million. Goods and services was 21 million. And we also had 2.3 million in machinery and equipment. The whole budget was spent to the 99.9%. Okay, this is how we have spent our budget in terms of the economic classifications. Can we move to the next slide? Chair, in terms of this slide, we are just providing a summary on how our allocation was spent. We confirmed, based on the figures that I presented, that the department was able to spend its entire budget. And this does not show that the department spent the whole budget. It also demonstrates the level of underfunding, as I've indicated, that we could not settle some of the invoices that were provided to the department in that financial year, because of we then did what we call a reprioritization. We focus on the key activities within the allocated budget, and some of the activities were overlapped to the new financial year. Chair, on number three, the directorate has a budget cut of almost 15 million in that financial year, which is something that negatively affected the department, because that 15 million was going to assist the department to address the current backlog that we are currently experiencing as IP. However, we did not have choice but to let the 15 million go. So it is one of the issues, Chair, that affects the ability of IPIT to address all the backlogs that we are reporting in each and every platform. Environment, Chair, as I've indicated, we as IPIT, for the whole financial year, we do what we call a rock Peter to pay Paul. Each and every financial year we meet after the allocation, we keep on doing shifting of funds just to prioritize some key areas, particularly in core functions. And in most cases, we shift budget from various programs to our core functions to make sure that the department continue to execute its constitutional mandate. And Chair, one of the areas that was prioritized was the implementation of Section 23. Chair, the number five, the department has therefore managed to process most of the payments. We are almost done, Chair. This surely will be the last financial year in terms of addressing the court order that the department received to fully implement the Section 23. It has been a long journey. It was difficult because of we have never received any funding from any sources. We depended on what was allocated to the department. We continue to do shifting of funds in order to prioritize. We managed to arrest the situation by prioritizing only key activities, and there was a significant amount that was shifted from goods and services to the tune of 22 million in order to address the Section 23. And when we do that, Chair, I must say it that we compromise some of the areas like your tools of trade for our investigators, like your ICT infrastructure. We end up compromising those areas when we shift money from goods and services. But like I said, when the court order is issued, we don't have any choice rather than implementing that court order as it is. Next slide. Chair, here in the financial year under review, we had a number of activities, and some of them were delayed, which includes the relocation of National Office. Chair and honorable members will recall that we've been struggling with the old National Office, and we have since, with the assistance of DPW, we have since moved from the old office to the new office. However, that process was not finalized in the financial year under review. It was only finalized in the new financial year, April and May. and hence the expenditure related to the process was incurred in the new financial year. Chair, that relocation also came with a huge expenditure, particularly on your ICT infrastructure, because we had to start with the ICT infrastructure from the scratch in the new building, including your cabling, your network, which we are still currently busy addressing. So those are the areas, Chair, that have been indicated here. Your bandwidth upgrade, your disaster recovery, your ICT infrastructure, which we are still currently addressing, since we could not address in the previous financial year. In terms of the transfers, Chair, we have managed to spend within our budget allocations, paying your lead graduates, amongst others, for officials who have since left the department, as well as your licensing for our vehicles. The machinery and equipment, Chair, this is where we spend on our vehicles. Chair, we have since done a study between the lease of vehicles as well as procuring of our own vehicles. And the study suggested that procuring our own vehicles is economical as compared to lease. So we continue to procure in each and every financial year vehicles for our investigators in order to avoid the leasing. And we also give our investigators subsidized vehicles so that they are able to respond to the scene when there is a need. Next slide. In summary, the bulk of our expenditure for the past two financial years, which is almost 99 million from our budget, has been on Section 23. Like I've indicated, we have managed to implement Section 23. We are almost done, Chair. The only part that is remaining is the medical aid, Chair. We are now finalizing the medical aid. We are working closely with GEMS to put the medical aid benefit of our investigators on par with the one of the SAPS members, which is Polmed. And we are waiting for a bot, a GEMS bot, to finalize and accept the customized medical aid benefit for our investigators. Once that part is done, Chair, will be done with the implementation of Section 23, and all what will be remaining will be to monitor and ensure sustainability of that particular implementation. Chair, in terms of the internal control systems, we have what we call a regular budget control committee meeting, where we meet oftenly to discuss how do we optimally utilize the limited resources. That's where managers make a presentation in terms of which areas can be compromised in order to rechannel our limited resources to program two. And we also receive a presentation on performance so that we are able to link our performance with our expenditure. The last part, Chair, we also try by all means to accommodate our COVID-19 issues, including the expenditure or items that related to COVID-19. We optimize our service delivery with the limited budget and make sure that our investigators received all the tools of trade, received all the safety gear, in order for them to continue doing the work within the allocation that the department has received. Chair, that was all from my side, and thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you very much, Mr. Steady. I'm now going to hand over to Mem Letlape to then talk to performance information of the department. Mem Letlape, over to you.
Thank you, Edie, and good morning, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members. The first slide is our summary of performance information, and we have flagged our performance from quarter one up to quarter four per program. And starting with program one, which is administration, in quarter one, our performance was at 20% with only one target that was on track. And in quarter two, the performance improved. We realized an achievement of 60% of targets that were on track. And in Q3, we maintained our rate of performance of 60%. However, unfortunately, in Q4, our performance declined and we only managed to achieve one target out of a total of five targets that were set for the period under review. And going to program two, which is our core program, in quarter one, our performance was was still at 69%. And for program three, the performance has been constant at 100% throughout all the four quarters, which is commendable given the challenges that we encountered during the period under review. And for program four, compliance monitoring and stakeholder management, our performance was at 25% in Q1. With two targets that were met, and in Q2, we improved slightly with three targets that were achieved. And in Q3, our performance improved again, where we were able to achieve a total of five targets against eight, which translates to 60%. And by the end of the quarter, all eight targets were met. On the overall departmental performance, in Q1, we were sitting at 27%, and in Q2, we improved to 40%. In Q3, the performance was at 67%, and by end of quarter four, there was also an improvement where we were able to realize a 73% achievement of our set targets. Next slide, please. Chairperson, this is performance per program, starting with program one. We have flagged all our output indicators, five output indicators for program one, for all the quarters, including the reasons that impacted on our performance. Starting with percentage implementation of ICT infrastructure plan, our performance was at 9% in Q2, in Q3, 12%, and there was no change in Q4. We were still at 12% by the end of the financial year. And as the acting CFO has indicated, due to the budget cuts, the department had to reprioritize the limited funding, and as a result, the implementation of the ICT infrastructure was one of the projects that was affected. And also, in order to enable remote working, procurement of tools of trade was prioritized, and there were three projects that were dependent on the relocation to the new national office building. As a result, we couldn't do anything until we relocated to the new building. and a project that could not be implemented, Chairperson, during the period under review, they were deferred to the new financial year, and the ICT plan will be reviewed in line with the new MTF budget allocation. Next slide. The next indicator is on the implementation of annual internal audit plan. Our annual target is 90%, and from quarter two, the performance was 35%, which was on track. In Q3, it was 53%, and it was still on track based on the activities that were planned for each quarter. And by end of quarter four, the performance was at 90%, the annual target was achieved. And for the implementation of risk mitigation strategies, the target is 60%. In Q2, the performance was at 26%, Q3, 35%. And by end of quarter four, we only managed to implement 57% of our risk mitigation strategies. And this is because some of our mitigation strategies were partially implemented and they were still in progress of being implemented by the end of quarter four. And we have since improved also the monitoring of progress in order to strengthen the performance of this indicator. And going to the next indicator, which is percentage compliance of SMS financial interest submitted through the e-disclosure. The target is 100%, and the target was set for quarter one, since the due date is end of April, and the target was not met then in Q1. And going to the next indicator, which is percentage vacancy rate, the annual target is to maintain our vacancy rate below 10%, and throughout the quarters, that is our target. And in Q2, we were at 9.21%, in Q3, 9.72%, and by Q4, there was a decline in our performance. Our vacancy rate was at 11.5% with 45 positions that were vacant by the end of the financial year. And in Q2 and Q3, targets were achieved. Q4 target was not achieved. And the baseline allocation was reduced over the 2021 MTF period, mainly in the composition of employees. And vacant positions were reprioritized to accommodate the budget reduction. The filling of vacant posts, Chairperson, was put on hold until the reprioritization process is concluded. And subsequent to that, an EG directive number 2 was issued giving direction on the filling of vacant positions going forth. Next slide. We are now on program 2, our core program, starting with the first indicator on investigations of death in police custody. Our annual target is 180, and in Q2, the target was not achieved due to delays in obtaining technical reports, including constant temporary closure of office due to COVID-19 challenges. And in Q3 and Q4, the targets were achieved. We even exceeded the annual target. And on investigations of death as a result of police action, our annual target is 280, and targets for Q3 and Q4 were not achieved due to delays in obtaining technical reports, for example, ballistic, postmortem, and histology reports, and also the constant temporary closure of offices due to COVID-19. In relation to the outstanding technical reports, by end of quarter four, Chairperson, we had approximately 200 cases which we could not finalize due to the technical reports that were still outstanding, and that had a huge impact on our achievement of the targets of 280. And for discharge of an official firearm, the annual target is 370, and the Q2 target was not achieved due to delays in tracing suspects caused by regular redeployment of police members between the police stations. And also the temporary closure of offices also affected the investigation processes. However, in Q3 and Q4, the targets were ultimately achieved, even exceeding the annual target. Next slide. On investigations of rape by police officer, the annual target is 130, and Q3, Q2, and Q4 targets were not achieved. And this is due to delays in obtaining technical reports, particularly the DNA, and active cases were lower than the set target. What we mean here, Chairperson, is that the case intake during the period under review was lower than what we've been receiving in the previous financial years. Because when we set the target, it was informed by the historic statistical data. But in the previous financial year or the period under review, which is 2020-2021, the intake was lower. And we are continuously making follow-ups, Chairperson, with the Department of Health and also the Forensic Science Laboratory on outstanding reports. And on investigations of rape while in police custody, the annual target is 15, and our Q2 target was not achieved due to challenges in accessing witnesses as a result of lockdown restrictions. However, Q3 and Q4 targets were achieved and the annual target was exceeded by 2. And for investigations of torture cases, our annual target is 80. Q2 target was not achieved due to challenges in accessing witnesses as a result of lockdown restrictions, but Q2 and Q3 and Q4 targets were ultimately achieved, even exceeding our annual target. Next slide, please. Okay, on the output for assault cases, our annual target is 2,000, and our Q2 target was not achieved due to challenges in accessing witnesses and temporary closure of offices due to COVID-19 infections. However, our Q3 and Q4 targets were ultimately achieved, and we even exceeded our target in Q4. And for investigations of corruption, but before I talk about corruption, with regards to assault matters, Chairperson, assault matters, they contribute almost 70% of our workload. So as the department, we really commend the performance that was achieved in the period under review. This is the first time that we're able to achieve this high number, because it really assists in reducing the workload of our cases. And for investigation of corruption cases, our annual target is 85, and all the quarterly targets from Q2 to Q4 were not achieved. And this is because these cases are complex and they take long to complete. And there were also delays in accessing witnesses due to lockdown restrictions, and some of the witnesses were unable to identify the alleged suspects. Next slide. On Section 28(1)(h) matters, our annual target is 10, and Q2 target was not achieved. Investigations were interrupted by temporary closure of offices and delays in accessing witnesses, but Q3 and Q4 targets were achieved, and Q4 target was even exceeded. And for section offences referred to in Section 33, our annual target is 25. Q2 target was not achieved, as investigations were interrupted by temporary closure of provincial offices and delays in accessing witnesses, and Q3 and Q4 targets were ultimately achieved. And for systemic corruption investigations, our annual target was 3, and in Q2 and Q3, performance was on track, and by end of Q4, we only had 2 cases that were completed. As a result, the target was not achieved for Q4, and this is due to the complex nature of investigations related to systemic corruption matters. We can move to the next slide. These are the two last indicators for program two. For dockets referred to the NPA within 30 days of being signed off, our annual target is 90%, and in Q2 and Q3, targets were not achieved due to the impact of temporary closures of stakeholders' offices as a result of COVID-19 infections, and in Q4, the target was achieved. And for recommendation reports referred to the SAPs and MPS within 30 days of being signed off, the target is also 90%, and it's only in Q2 where the target was not achieved due to same reasons that I've already alluded to for the NPA reports, and Q3 and Q4 targets were achieved. We can go to the next slide. Chairperson, this is our statistical information related to Program 2 investigations, and this slide projects our recommendation reports that were referred to SAPS, and we had a total of 2,220 recommendation reports that were referred. That is both for negative and positive recommendations. And for positive, when we say positive recommendation, Chairperson, we are making reference to reports where the investigation has been concluded and disciplinary steps are not being recommended against the suspects. And for negative recommendations, disciplinary steps are being recommended against the suspects. And for the 2,220, we had 1,518 which were positive recommendations, and for negative recommendations we had 702. Next slide. Okay, this is our negative recommendations that were referred per classification. The total, as indicated, is 702. And for Western Cape province, we had a total of 160, which was the highest number of negative recommendations. And we have Eastern Cape with 144 negative recommendations, followed by Free State with 97 and Gauteng 83. Negative recommendations were referred, and the highest number in terms of the classifications is Section 281F with 477 recommendations, followed by discharge of an official firearm is 75, and death as a result of police action, we had 62 negative recommendations. Next slide, please. Okay, this is the status of our recommendations, the negative recommendations, the 702. We had a total of 238 where disciplinary action was initiated, and disciplinary outcomes is 449, and awaiting feedback was 15. And positive, as indicated previously, was 1,518, and that brings us to the total of 2,220. Next slide. This is the status of disciplinary feedbacks by end of quarter four. For guilty outcome, it was 66, and no steps taken is 85. Not guilty is 34, and only 8 matters were withdrawn, and that brings us to the total of 193. We can go to the next slide. For guilty outcomes that were secured, in terms of classification for death in police custody, we had 2. For death as a result of police action, it's 6. Discharge of an official firearm, it's 9. Rape by police officers, 3. And assault or torture matters, it's 41. And for non-compliance with Section 33, it's 5, and the total is 66. These are the disciplinary sanctions that were secured by end of quarter 4. And for counseling, we had 4. Dismissal from service is 6. Final written warnings, 13. And we had 6 salary suspensions, 5 verbal warnings, and 32 written warnings, the total of 66. Next slide, please. On this slide, we are projecting criminal referrals that were forwarded to the NPA. We had a total of 1,887, with 229 in quarter one, 381 in quarter two, 786 in Q3, and in Q4, it was 491, and the consolidated figure is 1,887. Next slide. Criminal recommendations referred to the NPA. This is for pay classification. Chairperson, still on this one, assault is leading. We had a total of 1,505. And for death as a result of police action, 133, discharge of an official firearm, 112, and torture, rape by police officer is 47, and followed by torture with 36. Next slide. In terms of the status of our criminal referrals by end of quarter four, awaiting decision, we had a total of 1,478, where we were still awaiting decision by the NPA on whether to prosecute or not, and where a decision was made to prosecute is 34, and where they decided not to prosecute, the matter is 369, and six matters were withdrawn, the total of 1,887. Next slide. Okay, we are done with program two, Chairperson. Now we'll be presenting program three, legal and investigation advisory services performance. And starting with the first indicator, they have a total of four indicators. The first one is legal advice provided to investigators within two working days. The annual target is 90%. And the performance has been on track. They've been achieving their quarterly targets throughout all the quarters. And by quarter four, the performance was 100%, and it was 100% throughout. And for written legal advice provided to the department within 30 working days, all the quarterly targets were on track. And by end of quarter four, the performance was at 86%, with 18 out of 21 matches that were concluded within 30 working days. And for litigation matters referred with instructions to the state attorney within 10 working days, the annual target is 100%, and they've been performing at 100% throughout all the quarters from quarter two to quarter four. And the last one is contracts or service level agreements finalized within 30 working days. The annual target is 90%, and the performance has been constant at 100% from quarter two to quarter four. They had a total of 16 matters which they dealt with during the period under review. Program four, which is our last program, compliance monitoring and stakeholder management. They have a total of eight indicators. The first one is number of community outreach events conducted. The annual target is 30, and all the quarterly targets were achieved, and by end of quarter four, they had conducted 46 community outreach events. And for formal engagements held with key stakeholders, the annual target is 107. Q2 and Q3 targets were not achieved due to unavailability of some of our key participants who were in isolation, and also lack of capacity to have visual meetings with other stakeholders. But in Q4, the target was met, which is 107 formal engagements that were held. And for station lectures, the annual target is 42, and in Q2 and Q3, targets were not achieved due to temporary closure of police stations and IP provincial offices. Furthermore, most substations did not have the capacity to conduct visual sessions. However, in Q4, the target was met with 46 station lectures, station lecture awareness trainings that were conducted against the target of 42. In the next slide, these are recommendations that were referred to subs and NPS that are analyzed to check the quality of our reports and where there are queries or gaps that are identified, this is brought to the attention of the affected provinces so that there can be improvement going forward. Annual target is 1,100, and in Q3, Q4, Q2, and Q4, targets were achieved, and the Q4 target was even exceeded. We managed to analyze 2,173 reports. And for criminal referrals forwarded to the NPA that are analyzed, the annual target is 1,005, and Q2 target was the only one that was not achieved due to the low number of criminal referrals that were generated during the Q2. And by Q4, 1,838 reports were analyzed. Next slide. These, Chairperson, are responses that we have received from SAPS and NPS, which we have analyzed. And the reason why we are analyzing them is to assess as to whether are we in agreement with the outcomes that have been communicated by our stakeholders. Our annual target is 60%, and Q2 and Q3 targets were not achieved as a result of officials being in quarantine. The responses could not be analyzed timeously. And by end of Q4, the target was achieved, where we realized 74% output against the target of 60%. Next slide. These are responses that we received from the NPA that we have analyzed. The target, annual target is 50%. Q2 target was not achieved due to the same reasons that I've already alluded to, but Q3 and Q4 targets were achieved. And the last target, Chairperson, is on the number of case docket inspections that were conducted. We targeted 5, and all the quarterly targets from Q2 to Q4 were achieved. Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks, Ma'am Letlape. Therefore, Chairperson, in conclusion, we will continue to implement Section 23, which remains a priority to ensure compliance with the court order. We'll continuously make follow-ups with the Department of Health and Forensic Science Laboratory on outstanding technical reports. There is progress on filling of vacancies, and in this financial year, there will be dramatic improvement in the filling of vacancies. The Department will continue to reprioritize limited resources to support service delivery. And Chairperson, as we were busy engaging, there are just few pointers that I've also noted down. One is our continuous engagement with SAPS to allow us to sit in disciplinary hearings of, so that we can improve our state of negative recommendations. Because, Chair, they make a decision on the disciplinary hearings without our involvement. So we will ultimately have serious challenges because more officers are not being punished, or more officers are acquitted on this disciplinary hearing because we are not making any inputs towards that process. I just hope that the National Commissioner will actually hear, will also understand where we are coming from in terms of making sure that SAPS members are disciplined as such. We're also pleading that the proposal on the SAPS independent disciplinary panel must be fast-tracked to enable us to satisfy ourselves with the outcomes of the hearing. Chair, we're also pleading for our total independence. For us to bite as IPs, we really need our own lab one day because we are totally depending on our forensic laboratory of SAPS. We're also depending on the Department of National Health to assist us with the technical reports. So for us to really make an improvement in our cases, we really need to have our own one day. But we're not sitting and folding our arms. We're also discussing an alternative route of sourcing our own private pathologists to assist us in fast-tracking the technical reports. So we're also saying that our capacity needs to be boosted. I mean, to balance the ratio between IPs and SAPS,
were investigating 145,000 SAPS members with only 175 investigators. So really, we want to make an indelible mark, but 175 investigators will never ever try by all means to penetrate in dealing with some of the cases that are brought to us. We're really overwhelmed with the number of cases that are on our table. Chair, we've been having a challenge around our ICT, but this year we have entered into an agreement with CETA to second an ICT specialist to deal with the challenges of ICT in the department. So we are really trying by all means to make a strike in dealing with our ICT challenges. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, ED, for the presentation. I will then allow members to raise their questions or clarity seeking questions. I see Honorable Molekwa, Honorable Tara Blanche, Linda Moss, for now, is those three?
Shembeni, I'm struggling to raise my hand.
Okay, Shembeni. Any other person? Or let's take the first four. Honorable Malekwa.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me start by appreciating the report as presented by the department. Chairperson, according to the report, it seems that most of the programs were not achieved, and that is a point of concern. Although there are reasons presented on why those programs were not achieved. So I just want to find out from the department if there is any plan in place to strive towards making sure that those programs that were not achieved are achievable. My second question, Chairperson, is that according to the presentation, it says most of the programs that were not achieved is because of most of the official responsible were in quarantine. So I just want to check that if a person is in quarantine, there is no alternative so that the services should not serve. And then my last question, Chairperson, on the issue of the backlogs, I just want to check with the department because they have indicated that there's still a backlog of cases that were not attended to. So I just want to check if there is any mechanism to deal with the backlog. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Mulekwa. Honorable Tara Blanche.
Chairperson, thank you. Chairperson, I also want to start where my colleague ended. Apparently, this committee is the committee that is dealing with growing backlogs. If we look at the backlog here, you know, what is quite interesting is that, you know, the department managed to finalize or complete investigations of 3,679 cases, while their intake is 6,122 and their total backlog is 11,578. Chairperson, it does not seem that we are winning. We have growing backlogs. And obviously the question is, what are we going to do about this backlogs? Now, if you look at the specific areas, and I'm not going to mention all of them, you know, one of the very concerning, every crime is a crime, but rape targets have not been achieved, corruption targets, blah, 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 and so we carry on. Then another point of concern for me, and I would need to get some sort of clarity or information on that, is that 1,887 cases have been referred to NPA. And at the moment, at the moment they are awaiting feedback or a decision rather on 1,478 cases. What would the reason be for that? Can I just get some explanation on that as well? This is a serious matter that needs to get immediate attention. Chairperson, thank you. That is my questions for now.
Okay. Who's around this? It's Linda Moss, ne?
Yeah, Chairperson.
Yes.
Good morning, DM. Can I continue?
Yes, proceed, Honorable Linda Moss.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. And thank you very much for that beautiful speech of yours of yesterday. Chairperson, I'd like to express my, at first I want to say thank you very much for IPED for the report, but I also want to express my gratitude towards the performance. I mean, for them receiving this little budget, but they try to turn it around to implement some of their programs. Their budget was cut with, I think it's not 15 million. But they try their best. But there is some of areas where they can be improved. I want to take a Chairperson on the issue of the organigram when it comes to how many people that they employ in the organization, and how much is the spending towards it, and how many vacancies are in that organization who can actually implement some of the programs. That is for me very key. And what is left for them to outroll the other programs who are also very important. Then I come to the point of where one of the slides saying that that they have not filling the filing of the provincial lead positions of Mpumalanga in the Northern Cape, and it must be put on hold. Then my question is, so why did you advertise the post, and what was the processes while you put it on hold? And that when it comes to Northern Cape, there's always, not only in IPED, in also in the other, I mean, in subs, when it comes to appointments of Northern Cape, then the vacancies is not filled. Look, Northern Cape didn't have even a commissioner of police. So what is the issue that you put in that vacancies of that positions on hold? Can you tell the committee? Is it on the issue of the budget cut? Or what is the reason why that positions was be put, or that process was be put in on hold? Then I come to the point, the last very important point. We have the meeting last week.
with SAPS. And I was raising the question of this issue of IPET recommendations. And I was getting an answer and saying that you have a good relationship, a working relationship.
your department. The investigators must be capacitated. You must have more than you have now. But now, how many investigators out of the 175 that you are having, we are saying now, how many investigators do you have per province in order to be able to investigate the 180,000 police officers? Thank you very much.
Thank you. The executive director.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. We have noted the questions from the honourable members. Let's first start with the questions that are coming from Member Mulekwa, where most of the targets were not achieved. Do we have any plans in place? If you look at quota 3 and quota 4, honourable member, we had requested provinces, including the national office, to give us a catch-up plan so that we can monitor those catch-up plans. And indeed, they've yielded the result. If you look at our performance for quarter 3 and quarter 4, you can see that there is a drastic improvement in our performance because of the catch-up plans that were monitored on a weekly basis. We sat down with all the provinces, and including the national head, to make sure that we implement those catch-up plans that they've established to improve performance. And then with regards to people who are in quarantine, did we not seek alternative people or alternative ways of dealing with those cases? We did, Member Mulekwa. We had to hand those dockets to the senior principals to assist and continue with the investigation and also assist in sending some dockets to court. And then with regards to the backlog mechanism, I will hand over to the National Head of Investigation, Mr. Sisoko, to respond on the what mechanisms do we have in place to deal with the backlog challenges. Over to you, Dr. Sisoko.
Thanks, Idi, and good day to the Chairperson, honorable members, and Chief Minister. With regard to the backlog, and I'll deal with backlog, answering question to Honorable Lekwa and Honorable Ter Blanche. The issue of the backlog will stay with us for a considerable period of time until such time that we get adequate funding to deal with the huge number of cases that we receive. Having said that, though, we, as a department, we always find ways or devise strategies to try and deal with the backlog that we have. And as you may have seen in the presentation on our performance, you'll realize that for the first time, we are able to meet, in fact, targets on assault cases, which is the highest number of cases that we receive as a department. And this is largely because of our strategies on dealing with backlogs. Some of the things that we do in terms of dealing with the backlogs is to prioritize cases in terms of their age, and in terms of the priority cases that we deal with as a department, which would be your death in your death cases, your rape cases, your torture cases, as well as your corruption cases. So we prioritize those. But also, at the time when we prioritize with our limited resources, we ensure that when the investigators go out, they also, on the priority cases that they'll be doing, they also take cases that are in the area where they'll be conducting investigation so that they also deal with cases in those areas. So some of these strategies do yield fruit in terms of reducing the extent of the backlog. However, it is important to note that as we strive to deal with the backlogs that we have, then we are then faced with challenges where our budgets are then reduced, as the presentation showed that we had a 15 million budget cut. The implications thereof was that there was a reduction in the number of investigators that we have as a result of these budget cuts. Whereas on the flip side, we had received more cases in the year under review. That compound the situation that we have as a department, and as I've said that it therefore makes it difficult for us to decisively deal with the backlog cases, because in the absence of adequate funding, it becomes difficult to deal with all the work that comes our way. Dealing with the question of Honorable Terreplanche, the second question on the referral of matters to NPA and why we are waiting feedback on that huge number of cases. Honorable Terreplanche, it's difficult for us to answer that question effectively, because it really rests within the NPA in terms of their turnaround on dealing with the cases that are referred to them. I may, however, venture to say that from the media reports and some of the meetings we attend with the NPA, it's clear also that they have the capacity issues from their side, and hence their turnaround in dealing with the cases. But some of the issues in relation to these cases is that some of the cases, you find that once we referred these matters to them, after they've gone through to them, they would raise queries with us to go and address before they can take a decision on them. And that also delays in terms of them dealing with or being able to make decision on the cases. And then on the question by Honorable Linda on the cooperation with the SAPS on matters of recommendations. I think it's important to indicate that there is the cooperation, in the sense that we do meet, we do discuss these issues of recommendations, and as we had presented in the last meeting from the injunction by the committee, we went back and look at the issues that were raised, and we were able to deal with them as we had presented last time. I think the issues that the executive director was alluding to, it's really more about, again, the issue of capacity that we have, capacity constraints that we have, because even when we make recommendations to the NPA, I mean to the South African Police Services, we are not able to ourselves monitor in terms of their disciplinary hearings, how they actually deal with these cases. So we only receive outcomes in terms of how they've dealt with these matters. And this is an area where we are saying we may have to look at, in terms of how do we then get involved in monitoring those cases, so that when decisions and outcomes are made on those cases, we are there and we know exactly what happened, so that when there are issues, we can intervene at that early stage. So that is the main issue with regard to that. On questions by Honorable Chembeni on lack of adequate investigation because of closure of offices. I think on this issue, it's really the function of the difficulties that we all face, not only IPED, but also other departments in relation to doing our work within a COVID environment. So the issue of when we conduct investigation, for instance, there would be situations where we require information from police so we have to visit their offices to get information and so forth. And in some instances, you find that when our investigators go to the offices, you find that they say the offices are closed because of a COVID situation, which will mean we'll have to wait until the offices are opened before we can gain access to the offices and get information for investigation purposes. It is true that whilst there are restrictions or lockdown restrictions, we as IPED and police officers have permits to operate within that lockdown environment. However, the challenge is when there are issues of COVID and it's found that a person has been infected and he might have been in contact with a number of people within that environment, those people must also quarantine. So it becomes therefore difficult to have access to these people until they are out of quarantine. So those are the issues that we are trying to flag there to show how COVID has impacted on our ability to achieve some of the targets. On your question, Honourable Member, of the number of investigators that we have vis-a-vis the police officers for each province. Can I, Chairperson, kindly request that we provide that information in writing? I don't have it currently in my position, but we'll be able to provide that because also we need to get the latest numbers in the SAPS about the number of SAPS members per province, and then we'll be able to provide also our investigators per province. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Who is that?
It's the ED, Chair. I thought I wanted to add more to some of the questions that were raised. Sorry for that. There were questions. ED. Yeah. Thanks for that. There were questions also raised by Member Moss with regards to the organogram. Let me allow our head of HR to also respond to that. Mem Palazzi, please respond to that.
Good morning, Deputy Minister and Honourable Members. Thank you, ED. With regards to the organogram, the question was that how many people are in the structure against the expenditure. I will be talking to the number of people in the structure. Currently, by end of July, the department had 345 posts, which are our warm bodies in the organizational structure, which came to having 446 vacancies, which makes the total establishment of IPID to 391 positions. And around the follow-up was the filling with regards to positions as well. By Honorable Shembe. And our response as IPED is that vacancies come across because at some point in our organogram, you would have resignations and you would have transfers. One of the challenges by IPED is that you would find that when you conduct an analysis on your vacancies, you would come across a situation that when you have made strides in filling the positions, particularly those that are vacant at senior level from level 8 or to level 9, there will be promotions within the department. And those promotions, by the time when you are filling a vacancy, they also create a vacancy again in the organigram. So you find that like it's a circle or within the recruitment process. However, as a department, we have embarked on a recruitment drive, and the positions that we are referring to, which are 46, there's also entry level, which are investigator level. And the panel members have been spread across as we have come up with an approach that we should have panel members across that will deal with all provinces and also administration positions, and also give them tight timeframes where we monitor the filling of vacancies or the plan in our weekly meetings. And as we speak to date, out of all those vacancies that we have, which are 46, the panel members have already interviewed, and some are currently even in interviews, and they're sitting in provinces conducting the interviews, which there are a lot of strides made where the recruitment process, it is actually interviews are at the last stage of the filling of vacancies. But to close the matter is that we come across those challenges that because of other positions like your senior investigator, particularly in the investigation field or program, they are mostly filled by our investigators that are currently on the system, and also encouraging the promotions. Those vacancies become vacant as and when we fill, and they create another vacancy again. So therefore, in that regard, we find that we have a circle of recruitment or vacancies, but we are working very hard as a department with the commitment of managers in filling those positions. Thanks, Idi.
Thank you, Mem Palatsi. And then with regards to the budget on the compensation of employees, the acting CFO will give us a response to that. Over to you, acting CFO.
Thank you, Idi. Idi, the question from Honorable Shembeni was mainly on why the vacancies are not filled. Let me start with that question, Idi. I think it's important to inform our honorable members here that when you fill a vacant position, when you appoint one investigator, the expenditure to that appointment is not only on salary. You still need tools of trade for that position, such as your laptops, because our investigators are field workers. You still need vehicles. You still need a travel and accommodation budget. So when you look at our inadequate resources and against some of the vacancies that are here, including the fact that our investigator salaries have been now increased to be on par with our detective in terms of SASAC, you will then realize that for sustainability, you won't be able to afford all these positions. So as a result of that, the department has taken a decision to not to fill some of the positions. And that it happened immediately after the budget reduction, as well as the implementation of Section 23. Because when we were doing an analysis for the whole financial year, we then came to a conclusion that with the limited budget that we have, we won't be able to sustain. And we avoided what we call unauthorized expenditure. Because had we continued filling all those positions, the department was going to incur unauthorized expenditure. So that is the reason why some of the positions are deliberately delayed in order to avoid overcommitment of our budget that has been that has been disregarded by the PFMA. In terms of the two positions, the Mpumalanga and Northern Cape, I think the question came from Honorable Moss. Yes, indeed. These two positions were advertised, and they were advertised before the budget reduction of 15 million in compensation of employees. When the executive director started with the department, one of the exercises that she conducted was to look at an optimal utilization of our limited resources. And the exercise was done to determine on how do we utilize the resources that we have. And the conclusion was made that, yes, as far as these positions are in the IP Act, but practically, we must confirm whether we'll be able to sustain. We are talking backlogs today. We are talking the hotspot provinces. You are four big provinces, Western Cape, Gauteng, KZN, as well as Eastern Cape. When you look at the intake in those provinces and compare with Northern Cape, Mpumalanga, and Limpopo, and Northwest, you'll then realize that you need more capacity in those hotspot provinces. And as a result, the executive director made a suggestion that let us put this position on hold so that we are able to address, among others, the backlogs that are faced in those hotspot areas. And the exercise was fruitful because HR did an analysis and confirmed that if we put those positions, two of them in hold, you are going to have five investigators. Then those five investigators, as compared to the two positions, they will be able to deal with the backlog that we are talking about. So what we've been doing in terms of our limited resources, we always make sure that when there are positions, whether it's in program two core functions or other programs, we always make sure that those positions are reprioritized in order to increase capacity. And that's where we are looking at the grassroots level. Because if you have a higher, maybe a managerial post that does not deal with the backlog, it creates a problem because you will still increase the backlog while you are increasing your managerial position. So it's better to have people who will be able to work and reduce the backlog other than having a managerial position, particularly in the provinces with the lower intake as compared to the hotspot. In terms of the COE, the question also came from the Honorable Moss. Our budget, 78% of our budget is your compensation of the employees. And I indicated during my presentation that the compensation of employees has since increased when the implementation of Section 23 takes place. We are still trying to see if we'll be able to sustain, because we have never received additional budget for implementation of Section 23. We only reprioritize our limited resources. So we are still looking at whether we'll be able to sustain the increased salaries or not. And the other risk is that if you compare yourself with SAFs, when SAFs increase their members' salary as well as their benefit, it will then mean IPIT must do the same. The question is, will we sustain? Will we be able to also increase our salaries within the limited budget that we have? So there's no doubt that our budget is inadequate, and we continue to shift funds in order to address some of the key activities within our IP Act. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I think we have strived to answer all the questions posed to us. Thank you.
Yeah, I think I see other hands, but we're almost 2 hours on this presentation, but it allow, I don't know, Asnat Muleko, your hand is still up or is still there for the previous question. Asnat?
No, Chairperson, I'm covered, but I just want to say maybe in future, the department should make sure that before, on their presentation, before the conclusion, they should recommend on issues that need to be attended, especially on the program that were not achieved, that what is their plan to make sure that those programs are achieved? Thank you.
Honorable Tara Blanche.
Chairperson, thank you. Now, I just want to make a comment, if I may, please. You know, we have heard the presentation and the responses, and I must admit, I do agree that they have budget, you know, constraints. That is, you know, not even debatable. But, Chairperson, the responses that we received, according to me, is not very positive. It's not very convincing. Fact of the matter is, for many financial years to come, this department, like all other departments, are not going to get the budget that they want. And the obvious question is then, what are they going to do with what they have to improve their performance? And just lastly, Chairperson, coming back to my last question, I want to just emphasize again that, you know, the response from MPA cannot just be left as it is. And I would recommend that the director and even the ministry, if necessary, try to intervene to see whether they can maybe get some a shorter turnaround time. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Just from my side is that I think welcome the relocation of the directorate to the new offices. And it has been a long outstanding concern of the committee. Now, we just want to request that all the directorate to indicate whether the legal action related to the City Forum building has been finalized, and if yes, what are the total costs associated with the legal action? The second one is that the IPIT, I think it should brief us on the inputs made by the SAPS and the NPA on the IPIT amendment a bill. The other one of the forensic, all of us, we know that we have a very big challenge on the forensic and DNA. But with the health department, maybe the committee may request through the chairperson just an assistance to assist the IPIT. Lastly is the compliance monitoring and the stakeholder management program, which analyzed the 2,173 recommendations referred to the SAPS and Municipal Police Services, and analyzed 298 responses from the SAPS and Municipal Police Services. Can the directorate explain the findings made by this analysis and what lessons were learned from this? Thank you, Executive Director.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. We have noted the comments made by Member Molepa. We will certainly do that in our next presentation. And then with regard to the comments made by Member Tara Blanche, yes, we will try by all means. We are consistently engaging with NPA on these cases, but we'll continue to pursue them so that we can come up with a shorter turnaround time to deal with these cases. And the other question was around what do you do with what you have, because we'll never ever have enough money to deal with that. Chair, one of the things that we are doing as IPID currently is to reprioritize positions. The reason why you see the delay in filling of vacancies is that we have looked at all the vacancies and said, where do we need the vacancies? Where do we need the most? Program two, as our core function, we will definitely have to make sure that we fill positions in program two. So that's why you see us having to put on hold two senior positions with the budget allocated for those two positions. We'd rather create more junior positions to assist us in dealing with cases as well as backlogs. So this is what we are trying to do as the department. But we consistently monitor our budget. There's a BCC where we look at where do we spend our money, and where we have savings, we then shift our funds around to make sure that program two is well resourced to deal with the challenges that we are currently experiencing as a department. And then with regard to the questions by the chairperson on the legal action, we have our head of legal services, Ms. Morasi. Can she respond to the legal action relating to City Forum and whether it has been finalized and how much did we spend on that? Ms. Morasi, over to you.
Memorase.
Okay, Chair, I know that she's not in this meeting, but can I request, Chair, that we then forward or finish the portfolio committee with a written response to this question so that we can see how much have we spent, because legal services must then tell us what action have been taken and how much are we spending to deal with the City Forum issue. And then with regards to our inputs to the inputs on the IPID amendment bill by SAPS and NPA, we'll have to go back and check, and then from there we'll also finish a written response to the portfolio committee on this matter. The Department of Health, Chairperson, we fortunately we had a meeting last year December with the Department of Health to assist us in fast-tracking some of the technical reports that are submitted in their labs. Yes, they have responded positively. They have even allocated their officials to our provinces that they work together and deal with some of the backlogs. But we have also noted their comments that currently there are so many cases, COVID-19 cases that they are dealing with. So, but they will also try by all means to prioritize those cases. Although it is not moving at the pace at which we are requesting them to do, but they are giving us an assurance that they will definitely deal with our cases, and this is what they are doing. So the National Head of Investigation is consistently monitoring whether are we getting a positive feedback from the labs as well. So let's just hope that ultimately after this COVID-19 issue has died down, they will seriously concentrate in dealing with some of our technical reports. And then with regards to compliance and stakeholder issues of analysis, can I hand over to Mem Nitlape to assist Program 4 with regards to the analysis and the findings? Over to you, Mem Nitlape.
Thank you, Edie. Chairperson, may I request that we submit a written response in this regard so that we can adequately address your question?
Okay. It's fine, Executive Director. If there are no any other responses, can we give the DM?
No, thanks, Chair. And I think we should agree with the Executive Director that they must definitely finish the committee with a written response to the issues that the committee has raised. Yes, indeed, the budget constraints have had an impact on IPID, but despite that, they have been able to to they are able to do their work like subs that this budget cuts that has made it difficult for us to work. But despite this, we have no option but to continue to work within the constraints that we have. But we'll obviously appreciate further interaction through the committee to support the program to increase the funding for subs and for IPEG so that we can carry out our responsibilities. You can see that the current events have exposed the negative impact that the budget cuts has had on the police, but the security forces generally. If you cut their budget when the time for them comes where you need an appropriate response, you will find them wanting because they can't move from one point to the other with the required speed. And this affects your ability to defend yourself. So it's very important that we ensure that we address this funding shortcomings that we have experienced because of the economic situation. Yes, we understand the economic situation, but at the same time, the security of the country is very important. And I guess going forward, working together with the committee, we should be able to argue for an increase, or if there is a need for budget cuts, these areas, it should be a no-go area. And if you do go that in that direction, it should be with caution. But we appreciate the moment that you have given us, Chair, to come and account on what we did for the previous quarters to this committee, and appreciate the good work that the Executive Director and her team are doing. Yes, indeed. When she came, she was baptized with fire because she was inheriting an ongoing concern. There was no need to talk to her like she's a new person. She had to know that she is going into a space that had its own challenges. But we are happy that she has been able to respond to the challenge together with her team. There is marked progress. We can see it. And she was quick. But I guess it's because of the collective support that she got from the institution, because the institution was running before she came, and there were men and women there who were making things happen. So those that team that she founds there have made it possible for her to learn to come in running and continue with the good work that the team was doing. And together they've made a formidable team. We haven't picked up challenges within the institution itself. So it means she's providing appropriate leadership together with the collective that is there. But we appreciate the interaction, Chair. Thank you very much for this, and thanks to members for the questions and comments that they've raised. Thank you very much.
I'm not sure if the chairperson would want to make, if she's still present. If she's not present, thanks for the presentation, DM and the executive director. Obviously, the issue of the budget, it's a concern to us as the portfolio committee, and we will always make sure that when we speak, we support the budget. You're correct that you know, the these departments, there must not be a go, there must be a no-go area on cutting their budgets, because we learn after. And when we have advised before that, don't cut budgets on these departments. But well, we don't control the budgets, but when things happen, everybody wants to come and blame the department that you did nothing. Forgetting that cutting the budget affected their performance because they had to reprioritize on other issues. Thank you for the presentation. Over to you again, the DM on the Civilian Secretariat.
Thanks, Chair. Let me, without any waste of time, request through you to ask the Secretary to introduce the team that is with and proceed with your permission, Chair, with the presentation. Thank you. Over to you, Mr. Appiah.
Thank you, Mr. Appiah.
Thank you, Chairperson, honorable members, and thank you, Deputy Minister. I just want to introduce my team. The person who is going to lead the presentation is Ms. Itumeleng Lidwaba Moage. We have the CFO also will present part of the presentation, Mr. Tumelong Konjuana. We have in our midst also Mr. Takarani Ramaru, who is the Chief Director for Civilian Oversight, Monitoring and Evaluation, Ms. Bilkis Omar, Policy Development and Research, Ms. Dipsiwe Chemang, Chief Director Corporate Services, Advocate Don Bell, Chief Director Legislation and Legal Services, Mr. Mishak Mkhatusi, who is the Acting Chief Director in Intersectoral Coordination and Strategic Partnerships, Mr. Benjamin Ntuli was hospitalized due to COVID, but he's recovering well at home. He will come back next week, so Mr. Mkhatusi is sending him for him. Then we have Ms. Ayanda Tongwana, who is our executive director, executive support. Ms. Lindy Wemjeza, who is our chief audit executive, and Mr. Samuel Siluka, who is in charge of ICT, and our administrator in parliament, Ms. Mazibuko. Chairperson, as I indicated, Ms. Lidwaba Moage will make the presentation, but I just want to indicate that the layout of the presentation, which she will present, it provides the details per quarter. But when it comes to the finance, because we already finished the year, we summarized it on in terms of how we spend the money by the end of the financial year. But if honorable members would like to get details, the CFO can provide that details per quarter if that is required. So in those words, I would like to ask Ms. Lidwaba Moage to present through you, Honorable Chairperson.
Ms. Moage. Ms. Moage.
My apologies. Good morning, Chair and honorable members, Deputy Minister and Secretary. I'm just going to load the presentation. Okay. Thank you. Good morning once more, honorable members. So the purpose of our presentation this morning is to brief the Portfolio Committee with regards to our departmental performance for the second, third, and fourth quarter of the 2020-21 financial year. And this presentation, Chairperson, also serves as a precursor to the annual performance report, which we will be tabling before the end of September. Chairperson, So in the beginning of the financial year, we set as one of our priorities the implementation of our integrated human capital strategy in order to improve operational efficiencies, Chairperson. And one of the central pillars of this particular strategy was to implement our recruitment and selection policy in order to reduce the vacancy rate and also place concerted effort in terms of achieving our employment equity targets. So in terms of our organizational environment, in the second and third quarter of the financial year, we managed to maintain our vacancy rate at not more than 7%, Chairperson. We had filled 145 of our 155 post-establishment in quarter two and 144 of the post-establishment in quarter three, with one exit which then affected the vacancy rate slightly. We ended off quarter four with a vacancy rate of 6.41%, which translates into 146 posts filled. You will notice there, Chairperson, that the post establishment was increased to 156. This was during September 2020, when an additional post was created in the internal audit activity in order to increase the capacity there. So Chairperson, although natural attrition cannot necessarily be avoided, the department continues, as I indicated, through our integrated human capital strategy to prioritize the filling of these positions, taking advantage now of the eased restrictions in order to conduct interviews and fast track the recruitment and appointment process. Chair, in terms of our employment equity targets, so we've made a strides in terms of achieving the targets that are set by the Department for Public Service and Administration. So in quarter two and three, respectively, we had two people with disabilities, which translated into 1.38% of the staff complement. This was increased in the last quarter of the financial year when one additional person with a disability joined us in March 2021. So we have met the target of 2% of the staff complement in terms of people with disabilities. On gender parity, we ended off the financial year with 53% females and 47% males, and equal representation at senior management level in terms of males and females. So in terms of our service delivery environment, as you are aware, the environment in which we operate changed significantly during the period under review due to COVID, and we were particularly affected in terms of our people-centered mandate. The previous financial year was largely characterized by the different variations of lockdowns, and these restrictions, particularly in terms of the prohibition of mass gatherings and some restrictions in terms of traveling, implied that we had to be now innovative in terms of engaging with our communities and other key stakeholders. But notwithstanding these challenges, Chair and committee members, we leveraged on the use of technology in order to ensure that our public participation programs and consultations continued. So in terms of strengthening community partnerships, we managed to also conduct capacity building workshops, and also workshops in terms of the establishment of community safety forums with provinces and municipalities. This was done using a hybrid model of both virtual and in-person engagements as and when the lockdowns levels were eased. Our anti-crime campaigns also took place in partnership with our NGOs and NPOs. This was largely in response to the fight against GBV and youth gangsterism. We also tried to ensure that the ministerial public participation program continued uninterrupted, with a particular focus on traditional leaders, farmers associations, and our rural safety stakeholders, amongst others. So Chair, I indicated that this presentation also serves as a precursor to our annual performance report. So overall, for the financial year, we achieved 25 out of our 29 predetermined objectives, which translates into a performance level of 86%. And also worth mentioning, Chairperson, is the fact that the department also managed to achieve an unqualified audit from the Auditor General of South Africa. So, Chair, on our institutional program performance information, the tables in the next three slides indicate the performance in terms of program one, but I will jump to slide nine, which summarizes overall performance for the program, and I will follow a similar approach for the other three programs. So in terms of program one performance, Chairperson, the program during the period under consideration did not achieve the desired 100% performance due to a number of reasons, one being obviously the impact of COVID-19 on our costs, main cost drivers, which includes traveling, venues and catering. We also experienced some delays in terms of the approval of some of our human capital policies and strategies, the late approval of our ICT report, and the vacant funded posts, because at the time we were unable to conduct the recruitment processes. So you will see, Chairperson, that at quarter two, the program only managed to achieve 33% of its objectives, which increased quite considerably in the third quarter as the lockdown levels also eased, which implied that we were then able to fast track recruitment and other processes. We ended off the quarter, program one ended off the quarter four with 50% achievement of its planned targets. So on program two, Chairperson, I will go to slide 13, which is also a summary of program two performance. Program that was largely impacted by COVID-19 restrictions, given that we were unable to interact with communities directly at various points in the financial year. You will see at quarter two, we were only at 40% performance, given that some of those planned workshops and engagements could not take place. But in the latter quarters, quarter three and quarter four, we then made considerable efforts to achieve the targets that were lagging behind. On program three, Chair, I will restrictions refocus. Yes, Chair.
Can you go back? We didn't hear.
To program two, Chair? Should I go back to program two? Oh,
yes.
Okay. Okay, no problem. Okay, thanks, Chair. Okay, I am back now at slide 13, Chair. My apologies for that. So I indicated that program two was one of those programs that was largely impacted by COVID-19, especially in the earlier part of the year, given that some of our engagements with communities and workshops could not take place. Hence, you see the low level of performance in quarter two, but a substantial increase in the latter quarters of the financial year. As I indicated in the beginning, that we then made use of a hybrid model of both virtual and in-person engagements to make sure that the public participation programs continued. Some of the targets that were affected in the earlier part of the year, Chairperson, includes the MOUs with stakeholders that could not be concluded due to those COVID-19 restrictions. Some of the capacity building workshops and assessments of community police forums could also not take place due to the lockdown restrictions. So on program three, Chairperson, I am now on slide 16. On program three, Chairperson, although this program was also impacted by COVID-19, when we reviewed our annual performance plan in July, we refocused some of our indicators for this particular program to focus more on desktop research and the production of knowledge products to avoid the need for field work and direct engagements with stakeholders. Hence, you see the high level of performance in this particular program. Our legislative program also made some key strides, including the finalization of those bills that were intended to assist government with its response to COVID-19. This is with particular reference to the Firearms Control Amendment Bill, the Poddatara Amendment Bill, and the SEPS Amendment Bill. Program 4, Performance Chair, I will then move to slide 20. Chair, for Program 4 also made efforts to mitigate against the impact of COVID-19 on its work by employing alternative methods of data collection for their monitoring reports. Hence, you see the considerably high level of performance. We were, however, affected in quarter three, given the slight decline in performance. We were unable to access some of the courts in order to finalize the court watch briefs, and we also experienced delays in receiving some of the information that was required to finalize the SAPS budget assessment report. However, efforts were made to catch up on these areas of underperformance in the last quarter of the financial year. In terms of our overall performance, Chair, so as the performance at quarter two is also indicative of the fact that the earlier part of the year was quite challenging for us. This was also just after the amendments that we made to the annual performance plan in response to COVID. And overall, I think throughout the programs, there was a generally slower uptake to the new normal or the new way of doing things, including, as I indicated, the low levels of attendance by stakeholders and communities of those virtual workshops and consultations, and delays in finalizing some of our reports and policies. However, in spite of these challenges and the constrained fiscal environment, we then tried to catch up on those areas of underperformance. You'll see in quarter three, there was a considerable jump to 79% performance. And in quarter four, we ended off the quarter with 83% achievement of our predetermined objectives. So Chair, when we tabled this particular annual performance plan in May last year, we indicated that we've aligned our outcomes with the medium-term strategic framework and by extension, the National Development Plan. So we have since placed a particular emphasis on achieving those deliverables that contribute to priority 6 of the MTSF. Most notably in terms of our key achievements include the finalization and approval of the Integrated Crime and Violence Prevention Strategy, which was a 5-year MTSF target. We've managed to achieve it in record time. We also conducted a trends analysis on the performance of the top 30 high crime police stations for 3 financial years. This was in relation to reported serious crimes, training and development, human resources and vehicles. And we also fast-tracked the finalization of a number of key legislation. Furthermore, the department has already conducted 2 studies, Chair, on the management of litigation by SEPS. And last year's assessment sought to identify those critical areas that require attention in the management of civil claims by SEPS. It's also sought to monitor those trends on litigation management, assess the progress that SEPS has made in implementing previous recommendations that we've made, and also make future recommendations on how best to manage litigation. For this particular financial year, Chair, we are also looking at some of the policy gaps in terms of civil claims management by SEPS. So Chair, on the progress made on the bills, of the 10 bills that we are reporting on, Chair, 3 of the bills were approved by the JCPS Ministers Cluster for further processing to the JCPS Cabinet Committee during the period under reporting. This includes the Criminal Law Forensic Procedures Amendment Bill. It also includes the Protection of Constitutional Democracy Against Terrorist and Related Activities Amendment Bill, and also the Firearms Control Amendment Bill. In terms of the SEPS Amendment Bill, during the period under review, Chair, there were engagements with National Treasury and the relevant budget forums in order to deliberate on some of the financial implications of the bill. SEPS had confirmed that they didn't have a dedicated budget for the functions with respect to the movement of the community policing structures, and hence the transfer of those structures could not did not have the necessary funds to go with the transfer. The engagements were also in an effort to ensure that we ensure compliance with the Intergovernmental Relations Framework Act. Chair, on the IPID Amendment Bill, there were a number of issues in terms of extending or expanding the mandate of IPID to include traffic police of the various municipalities and metro police services under the jurisdiction of IPID. The state law advisor is also attending to this matter on an urgent basis. The department also made a proposal in terms of establishing an oversight mechanism over the law enforcement agencies and peace officers who are provided for under the Criminal Procedures Act. So these are some of the matters that are being attended to. Furthermore, in terms of the IPID Amendment Bill, Chair, we are aware that the committee posed a number of questions with regard to the progress made on the IPID Amendment Bill. So slide 26 will address our responses to these questions. And then last, in terms of the Civilian Secretariat for Police Service Amendment Bill, this particular bill is still at an initial phase, Chair, and at the time of reporting, the bill had been circulated internally in order to solicit some inputs from staff members. So on the review of the Regulation of Gatherings Act, the Second Hand Goods Amendment Bill, and the Stock Theft Amendment Bill, and the Critical Infrastructure Protection Regulations, what I can say, Chair, is that work is continuing through the various drafting teams on these particular bills. And worth mentioning, Chair, in terms of the critical infrastructure, at the time of reporting, the parliamentary process of recruiting some of the members of the council, particularly those from the private sector, was underway. And during March 2021, the department met with National Treasury and DPSA with regards to the financial implications of these appointments. So Chair, on slide 26 here, we indicate our responses to the questions that were posed by the committee on the IPID Amendment Bill. So the first question was, when was the decision, the court decision to amend the IPID Act made? So we are saying that the decision was made during the judgment of McBride versus the Minister of Police, which is case 255/15, that was handed down in September 2016. So this particular judgment indicated that certain provisions of the IPID Act were invalid in as far as authorizations in terms of the Minister of Police. So what has been done in relation to the decision, Chair, from 2016? So the amendment bill, which addressed the Constitutional Court ruling, was then introduced to Parliament in March 2018 and published for comments in June 2018. It was passed by the National Assembly and referred to the NCOP, which passed the bill in 2019, and it was assented to by the President in June 2020. So the recommendation that was made to amend the Act by the committee was made in January 2018. However, the priority at this time was on addressing specifically the Constitutional Court ruling, and the department was then advised to bring the full amendment of the Act before the committee at a later stage. In terms of how far the amendments are at the stage, Chair, I had indicated that the state law advisor is attending to the issue of extending the jurisdiction of the mandate of IPID. The draft bill is currently in process, and the process of briefing the FOSAT cluster on the draft bill has also commenced. The bill, as the ED of IPID indicated, was presented to the JCPS Development Committee in July 2021. It was returned with a few areas of concern which are being addressed currently, and it will be presented again. The updated bill will be presented again at the next meeting of the JCPS Development Committee. It is envisaged, Chair, that the draft bill, after having followed through on all these processes, will be introduced then during the 2022-2023 financial year. Chair, on slide 27,
is an illustration in terms of our institutional response to the COVID-19 pandemic. As the committee is aware, as the CSP, we are not necessarily involved in any direct COVID-19 interventions or externally focused COVID-19 interventions. So these measures that are taken here is with regard to protecting our staff members from the risk of infection. So this includes the purchasing of sanitizers, masks, the transportation of frontline workers during the hard lockdowns, and also the disinfection and deep cleaning of offices. So by the end of the period under consideration, Chair, we had spent a total amount of 426,085 rand on these particular interventions. Chair, so the next slide focuses on the summary of financial performance, and at this stage I will hand over to Mr. Ngondrana, our CFO, to take the committee through the quarterly financial report. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Mr. Ngondrana. Thank you, Chair. Yeah, my name is Tumelo Kujona, CFO at the Civilian Secretariat for Police. Yes, thank you, Chair. Thank you, DM, honorable members, the secretary, colleagues, and all present. So I'll be presenting the finances. And as the secretary has indicated, we've actually taken the final picture of the expenditure up to the fourth quarter. But at the end, I'll just give a brief of maybe how did we perform during the second and the third quarter. So at the department, we had an original budget of about 156.3 million, which then after the second cut, it went down to 137.2 million. And during our final appropriation, which is informed by the environment that the department conducted at the end of the financial year, the budget still remained at 177.2 million. Out of that amount, the department spent about 131.5 million, which equaled up about 96% of the budget that was finally appropriated to the department. That then resulted in a savings or in an underspending of about 5.6 million. Looking at the different programs, you will note that the original budget for the administration program, it was 69.4 million. Following the second cut, it went down to 60.9 million. But during the final appropriation, which I said is to have informed by the environment that we conducted at the department, then the budget for administration went up to 63.6 million. Of that amount, we spent 61.9 million, which is an equivalent of 97.3 million. Looking at the intersectoral coordination program, that budget, they had a final appropriation budget of about 22.6 million, and we are saying that they spent about 100% of their budget. Legislation and policy development, they had a final budget of about 20.7 million, and of that, they spent 18 million, which is an equivalent of about 90% of their budget. And then looking at oversight monitoring evaluation, which includes the DPCI judge, as well as the National Forensic and Ethics Board, which is the DNA board in essence. So that program in total had a final appropriation of about 30.1 million, and of that amount they spent 20.3 million, which is an equivalent of 94%. The next slide will be informing us about the different economic classifications. In terms of compensation of employees, at the department, we had an original budget of about 112 million. Following the second budget cut, that budget went down to 104.7 million. And of that amount, we spent 99.3 million, which is an equivalent of 95%. And you can see that then the underspending on that, on the compensation of employees, it was about 5.4 million. Looking at goods and services, we had an original budget of about 42.2 million, which then ended up during our final appropriation to 25.9 million. And of that 25.9 million, we spent 25.8 million, which is an equivalent of about 99.5%. And you'll note as I go down to the other economic classification, while we had an adjusted budget of about 30 million for goods and services, the reason it ended up with being 25.9, it was because some of the budget was violent to assets, where we had to procure the ICP, taking into consideration the cost and impact, but also having to own vehicles as the department. In terms of transfers and subsidies, we had a budget of about 28,000, which then had to increase during our final environment to about 742. And of that amount, we spent 80.7%. And this amount relates mostly to the people that would have left, that would have had to pay after they have left the employment of the department. Now coming to payments for capital assets, you will note that as the department, we had a budget of 1.8 million, but that budget was then increased to about 5.6 million. And as I've indicated, this man was violent from the goods and services budget, so as to be able to pay for the ICT equipment, and the ICT equipment that had to be bought actually included the servers. It was as much as there were computers, but there were also servers that we had to buy as the department, because most of the previous financial debt, we used to rely on CETA in terms of our servers, and therefore we made sure that as we move into a new building, then we had to acquire our own servers. And of that budget for the payment for capital assets, we almost spend 100% of that budget. So that will be as at the end of the budget. And as I've indicated, I would just like to share the information which is not there regarding the second quarter, which ended in September, and the third quarter, which ended in December. This is just the narrative of what I've just shared with the members, but now I'll move over to information which is not included there. So I've indicated that during the second quarter, as a department, we spent 54 million of the 144 budget, which was then equivalent to about 37.5%. The 144 million was after the first budget cut, because you know that after the second budget cut, we were cut down to 137. During December time, we had already received our second budget cut, and during that time, the budget spent was about 65%. And relating to what has been presented by the Director for Strategic Partnership, when you look at performance, you'll note that performance was very low during the second quarter, but it steadily increased the third quarter, as we have noted, particularly with Program 2, which is involved with community engagement. So you will also see between the first and the second quarter, our budget expenditure increased by about 17%, and between the second quarter and the third quarter, our budget spending increased just for that quarter with about 28%, and between the third quarter and the fourth quarter, our expenditure increased to about 30%. And as I've indicated, this improvement is in relation with the easing of the lockdown restriction, which are also reflected in the performance of the department. Thank you very much, Chair. That will be the end of my presentation.
Thank you. Sometimes, you know, you must not present things that we don't have here as the portfolio committee members, that we cannot reflect on, but you only have them. It disadvantages us as members to engage on your presentation. So next time, it's very important that we need to have those pages that are not there, because we don't see what is happening. But anyway, it's fine. Let me now see. I see. I'm still there. doctor's letters. If not, are you still there? Or is the old end? Okay, let me give Honorable Tara Blanche.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson and well, let me first thank the Secretariat for this presentation. I found it very informative. Something that I'm really interested in is the crime and violence prevention strategy. That is, can be very useful. I just want to know, what is the status of this strategy now? Has it been implemented? Or what is the position with that? And if implemented, is there any sort of indication what the impact of that is at the moment? Chairperson, then secondly, the firearm amendment bill, you know, there is a huge pushback at the moment, you know, in the public domain. And I was just wondering whether that is going to impact this amendment bill. And if yes, to what extent? I just want to get some clarity on that as well. Chairperson, then the IPED Act. Can somebody just explain to me why would it be necessary for IPED to investigate the traffic officers and, you know, that people as well? I mean, you know, policing is still a police function. So are we saying that we don't think that the police are able to do proper investigations as the traffic police is concerned? Jefferson, I think the second-hand goods amendment bill, I just want to get also confirmation. I think it's in there. I haven't read the book yet. I just want to make sure that there is provision made for, you know, critical infrastructure related items, like for instance, you know, electrical cables, stuff like that, that is going to be protected, if that's the term for that. Chairperson, and then, yeah, what is that? That's what I still wanted to ask. Chairperson, let me stop for there, for now there. Thank you.
Somebody just said in me. I think it's an old hand. I don't know whether Honorable Tara Blanche did ask this question about the sub amendment bill regarding the funding of community policing structures. I'm raising this thing because this community policing structures are playing a very important role in our communities, especially during the past unrest. The CPFs, the community police structures, were in the forefront trying to stop this thing, mobilizing the communities. So the amendment bill proposed that the full functions and funding will shift to Provincial Secretariat for Police Service. But these functions have never been budgeted for by the SAPs. So as such, there's not funds to transfer with functions. So I just want to know what's happening there. Lastly, that just the copy of a management letter
from the Auditor General, which include the full set of audit findings, not only the broad findings published in the annual report. I'll stop there also.
Chairperson, I remember now the question that I forgot. May I raise it at some stage, please?
You can raise it now because I don't think we'll have raised questions now so that we don't go to the second round. Because
thank you. Chairperson, thank you. It's only one. On the firearm amendment bill, Chairperson, I was just wondering, you know, we know the huge problem that we are dealing with as South Africans regarding, you know, the renewal of firearm licenses and everything that goes with it. Chairperson, I was just wondering whether an interim solution should not be found, you know, because the police will not be able to address this backlog, you know, in the very near future. And I was just wondering whether something mustn't be maybe built in there to allow people, you know, just to be legal again for a certain period of time. I was just wondering, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Dr. Blanche. I don't see any hand. Oh, Shembeni. Honorable Shembeni.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to check that on the monitoring of performance conduct, transformation and compliance to legislation and policies by the South African Police Services, that does the civilian secretariat know exactly all the police stations that the South African Police Services have? For instance, why am I asking this? I'm asking this on the basis of the Bridgecamp police station in the Eastern Cape. But I would like to hear from the civilian secretariat, because they're the ones that are doing also oversight on the SAPS, that is that police station, or is it a police station, that one, that it's enough to be used as a police station for the people of South Africa? Is it right in the correct standard of being a police station? The requirements, does it meet the requirements of a police station? I just want to quickly find out from them. And another one is Ilinge police station, also in the Eastern Cape. I'm looking at that because they must be knowing the so-called now the police stations in the whole of South Africa. That are these police stations meeting the requirements or the required standard of being police stations or what? Thank you.
Thank you. Any other hand? Mr. Rapia?
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Chair. I will end with some questions. The other ones that I left out, I will indicate who can respond to them. The first question regarding the crime and violence prevention strategy, it was approved by the minister, but it has to go to the cabinet now for approval, because this strategy is about the whole of
society, the role of government. So it's a strategy that needs to be approved at a cabinet level. And we have already presented it to the JCP as a cluster of ministers. And because of the changes, we have to go back now so that by the time it goes to cabinet, even the new ministers who came on board would have been briefed. It doesn't come to cabinet as a surprise to them. So the minister is going to look at a slot to get that. The firearm controls amendment bill, will the outcry, I just want to indicate that we received more than about 1,200 submissions that we received, and we are busy analyzing those. We've gone out on public participation, so inputs that come from communities will be taken into consideration, and obviously it will have an impact in terms of what is the content of the legislation. We might change other areas based on the submission that we have received. So we're looking into that, and once we have looked into it, we'll do a proper analysis, and then we will adjust where we have to adjust, and then we have to go back to the minister, the deputy ministers, back to cabinet before comes to parliament. I just want to also deal with the issue on the bill, which talks about the issue of renewal. In the amendment bill, we are also putting in an amendment which talks about if you didn't apply, the current bill says you apply 90 days before they expire. So if you apply after the 90 days, we don't say you are not allowed to apply. The proposal that we have in the amendment bill says we can introduce the fine, but you still will be allowed to apply for a firearm. But that's an improvement in terms of the current proposed bill. The issue of IP investigating the traffic police, the traffic officers, what we learned, and this was the input that we got from IP, that traffic officers also deal with criminality in their daily work. Although their focus is on issues of traffic violations, but they indicated that currently there is no oversight over them. So we were asked to explore that area and see how we can incorporate them in the oversight of IP. But the chief state law advisors have come back with their assessment in terms of what we're trying to do. And their recommendation is that because they are managed under a different legislation, which is traffic, it won't be constitutional to incorporate them as part of IP oversight. That's the advice from the chief state law advisor. So we are looking into that. There's a question which was Honorable Terabans raised regarding the Second Hand Goods Act and the Second Amendment Act. I didn't quite clearly get the question. And I would ask that maybe he can just clarify that question for us so that
position is, and this is the motivation that we gave National Federation, that you cannot say, I am paying for this thing, but you cannot, you say you didn't budget for it. Somewhere, somehow, you should be able to say, even though I didn't budget for it, we spend so much on transporting the CPFs, we spend so much in terms of accommodating them, we spend so much in terms of meetings, because you can up on those operational station by station. Indicate this is what we have spent. The number might not be significant enough for me to can address the issues that the legislation will come up with. But to say, no, we can't give you that number, I don't think it's a good reason. So National Treasury has written after our intervention to the National Commissioner and say we need to resolve this issue before the bill goes back to cabinet, because the quantification of that is important. So we are engaging with the National Commissioner on that, and we hope that we'll be able to finalize this in the next 2 weeks or so, and then we will, if we are able to resolve the matter, we will then ask the minister to intervene and also guide us in terms of how we take the process forward, so that because we promised the portfolio committee that we will be finalized with our process by end of August, and as the chairperson rightfully so said in the beginning, that we are supposed to be coming back with the SAPS amendment bill. That's what we are aiming to finalize this. With regard to the management letter, we will be able to share that with the portfolio committee. We always do that in our presentation. When we do our action plan in terms of dealing with the AG report, the list that we put there in terms of the interventions we are going to make, we include all the findings that are in the management letter. I will ask Ms. Ramaru to begin with the questions that have been raised by Honorable Shendeni on the police stations that he raised. Ms. Ramaru, if you can respond to that.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, Deputy Minister Cedric, colleagues. I will request that we, if possible, we be allowed to submit a detailed or written report on these two police stations, that is the Bridge Camp Police Station and the Yilenge Police Station, where we will compile a report to answer the question asked by Honorable Shembeni in this regard. But otherwise, yes, we visit all the police stations together with our provincial secretariat colleagues. Thanks.
Thank you, Ms. Ramaru. The question that we didn't get clear, the question from Bolter Blanche, if you can allow the Honorable to clarify that so that we can respond to it.
No, Mr. Nasir, he wanted you to he was asking if we can't in the amendment can't factor in the issue of the renewal of licenses. You know this problem about people who didn't renew their licenses.
Can I give
clarity on that, please?
Yes. No, Dr. Blanche.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, no, I got a response on the firearm amendment on that bill. What I wanted to know is on the second hand goods amendment bill, and specifically in relation to, you know, things that is within the domain of the critical infrastructure. Like, for instance, you know, we have a huge problem, you know, with theft of electrical cables and stuff, ESCOM, you know, power, things like that, and even rail tracks. And that is what my question is. Can't we, are we, or have we brought in something there that really, you know, address this issue to a better extent, maybe? Thank you, Jefferson.
Thank you, Honorable Dr. Blanche. Thank you, Chairperson. As we indicated in terms of the review of that legislation, the work has just started. I would take this as an input that as we are considering this Second Hand Goods Act, we mustn't forget about the damage that is caused in our critical infrastructure and make sure that that is included in the legislation. So we'll take note of that and then make sure that the staffers they take this issue into consideration. Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay.
Shembe, this is an old hand, isn't it? Yeah, I think people must lower their hands. I think it's enough old hand. Okay. Now, if there are no more any other questions, can I give the DM?
No, thanks. I think I'm happy with the responses. There isn't much one can say beyond this, but we appreciate the opportunity the committee have given us to account on what we have done and how we performed for the quarters that we are dealing with currently. But thanks very much.
Yeah. Thank you very much, honorable members, DM, the team from the IPID Executive Director, and your team, Mr. Rapia, and your team from the Civilian Secretariat, the staff. I think we've done well so far. We've received this thing, but we need to monitor the trend as honorable members that things are implemented as they have been budgeted for. If there are reviews, we know that there are challenges about the chairperson and the DM spoke about it, and all of us in the committee really we are in support of the department, not only the IP or the civilian secretariat, but the police also, because it's a serious challenge. Because you may find that you don't meet your target because you have to move, shift fund from this one to this one, and as a result, it affects your performance. But so far, I think we're happy with the answers and the presentations. But I think we need to do better about the bills because we have prioritized them as the committee, the IP amendment bill and the subs amendment bill. We have prioritized them, and maybe in the next coming portfolio, the chairperson will advise when to come and present. With those words, I think the meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much.
Thanks, chairperson. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, chair. Thanks, members.
Thank you, Chair.